The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. And actually, yes, Gary Hendler is here, and that's me. And Linda E. is with us today. She's substituting for Mark Sigmund, my co-host, who is in Florida on a well-deserved vacation. Linda, what is new in the recovery news?
What I have today is that last week, the Food and Drug Administration approved Narcan, a name brand naloxone nasal spray, for over-the-counter sales. It's a life-saving medication that can reverse the effects of opioid overdose when administered in a timely manner to a person experiencing an overdose. And, you know, it's great that they approved it for over-the-counter, so you don't have to walk up to the pharmacist. However, I think this is an opportunity for them to monetize it, because up until now you could get it for free.
That's a good point.
So I think they finally want to make some money, and who knows what they're going to sell it for, but now you'll be able to buy it over the counter.
So, all right. So let's get over the money thing. It'll be hopefully easier access.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that the price of it won't be prohibitive, because the people that need it, a lot of don't have the means.
Exactly.
You know, that's good news. That's good news. So CBS in Minnesota reports that more children under the age of five are dying from opioid overdoses, under 5 years old. And obviously, they're not the users, but their parents or guardians are. That is so, so scary.
It is.
You know, that kids under 5 years, innocent children, are dying from this stuff now.
And I know that we've had a few in Delco, and it happens. They take it, they pass out, they leave the bag around, and the kid is crawling around, and they get it. Or they get something that looks like a candy, and it's a fentanyl.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
They found that 3/5 of those deaths happened in a child's home.
Yes.
And about a third were supervised by someone other than their biological parent.
Interesting.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that reminds, you know, it's all of this is so sad, and it almost seems helpless and hopeless in a way.
It does.
I mean, we never heard of kids under 5 years old overdosing.
No, it's horrible.
Let me see what else is going on here. The study concluded the drugs of choice have also changed. With more awareness of the opioid epidemic, more doctors are prescribing less opioids. The result is more people are turning to heroin and fentanyl, thereby exposing the children now to heroin.
Exactly. That's what's happening.
I wonder what the treatment is, the children that don't die.
Detox them in the hospital, just like they do pregnant women.
Right, because there's no rehabs that are equipped to take little kids.
No, they detox them.
They detox in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all right, that's very interesting. All right, I'm very excited about the show today. We have our dear friend, Judge Christopher Maddox, is with us again. And the interesting – so Chris is – Judge Matt. I told him I would call him Judge the whole show. Judge Maddox is he's basically the first line. When you get arrested, you go in front of a magisterial district justice, at least in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And, you know, as I wrote in the promo, the whole thing is not a good experience. You know, I guess the bottom line is get treatment before you get into trouble.
Yes.
And Judge Maddox is going to explain to us the system, how it works. And this should be very interesting and very, very informative. And we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, everybody, this is Tommy James, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio, and so am I.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Clean and Sober Radio can also be heard on these great radio stations, WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, WHFS in Tampa, Florida, and the big talker, WWWE in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's all good. The more we can spread the word, the better off we are. So, Judge Maddox, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
We love you here because you are a great supporter of the show and also about the problems that we're having across the country with addiction. So you get it. And we're just really happy that you're here. And I think you brought – did you bring somebody with you?
Yes, I brought my lead public relations agent, my daughter Christine, today. She's off on spring break. Her mom's working. And this will be a great experience. She can tell the kids all about it.
I thought you said she was a public defender.
No.
Not yet? Not yet. Okay. Not yet. Judge Maddox, explain to our audience, what is a magisterial district judge?
Okay. So in Pennsylvania, we have about 540 of us throughout the state. Philadelphia has municipal court judges, so they don't have magisterial district judges. The municipal court judges are all lawyers, and they're paid a little bit more. And they actually can write some opinions. Magisterial district judges are elected by the people every 6 years. They do not have to be a lawyer. But if they're not a lawyer, they have to take a four-week course in Harrisburg full time. So they have to go live in Harrisburg for 4 weeks, take a test. And if they pass that test, they then are eligible to – well, they can run for re-election whether they pass the test or not. But – most people, you will then be eligible to take the office if you are elected. So that's the non-lawyer MDJ. And then a lawyer MDJ doesn't have to qualify because they're a lawyer.
But Judge, let me ask you a question. How can somebody learn enough in 4 weeks when you had to go to law school for 3 years plus?
Right.
How does that work?
I'm not going to say pros and cons, but the good thing about the course is that they get into a lot of the practical aspects of our job that just being a lawyer, you don't necessarily get exposed to. So I'm going to give them some credit for that.
Right.
I think my 3 years at law school is invaluable to how I do my job, how I approach the job, and then just sort of how you understand it. But I find that the most of the MDJ, I'll just refer to them as MDJs, most of the MDJs that are non-lawyers that are really good are the ones that are come from the system, whether they're a former constable, a police chief, or what have you. And they've dealt with the magisterial district judges in their other careers their whole life, and they just kind of seamlessly get into it. So I personally believe that once you get elected, you're in, you're part of the team, and let's help each other and let's get it done.
This judge has a good attitude.
He does. You know,
Linda, I sat with Judge Maddox yesterday in his courtroom.
And what did you do?
Well, I rendered most of the decision. No. I watched. I listened.
Mm-hmm. That's
awesome. Obviously very knowledgeable, but very compassionate and has a very, very good attitude where when I was sitting, I was like, get these people out of here already, you know? But he listens to the whole case and then and he knows what to do after that. So it's a great experience to sit in with a judge.
Right. What kind of cases did you see?
Landlord-tenant yesterday.
Okay.
And last month, they were criminal.
Criminal.
Okay.
That was more interesting. I got to tell you. It was a little more interesting.
Right. So fortunately, we didn't have any incidents yesterday. Yeah. But you know, Mr. Hendler had asked me before – yeah, Gary.
Yeah.
Had asked me before court, like, what happens if something goes on? And I said, my style is – to let the people argue it out, and then it's kind of like a hockey fight referee. As soon as they tire themselves out, Then I move in and I say, okay, I've heard everything I need to hear here today. Have a nice day. I'll mail out my decision within 3 to 5 days because of what we have to do required by the law.
So you don't make – you don't render?
I do. I usually do it right then and there. But if it's a difficult case or – because I've had people fighting on the way out into the parking lot. And I don't need that and I don't want that.
Right.
So you just kind of learn it. You just – as you can – this is my 20th year. I'm very proud of that. It's awesome. A significant milestone.
Yeah.
So I'm just into my 20th year, and so I've been doing it a while.
Right.
And I think I've developed a good feel for it. A funny story about my criminal list, though. Gary was with me, and about an hour and a half into it, I was getting up to take a break, and I said, all right, we're going to take a break. And as I'm walking out, Gary said, don't worry, Judge, I have it from here.
I love it.
So, that was fun. So we can have fun. I mean, we can have fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think back, you know, 41 years ago, I'd be standing in front of Judge Maddox, you know?
Right.
So it's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about some drug, you know, cases and what's going on now. With the legalization of marijuana, are you seeing more arrests because of that? Because people think, I believe, that if you have a marijuana card or marijuana is legal other than for recreational, you can smoke and do whatever you want. Is that changing what's going on in your courtroom, Judge?
Well, the DA's office does have a policy that, you know, low-level, you know, marijuana, you know, possession for personal use kind of case, that they're going to turn that into a disorderly conduct and get rid of it.
Okay.
That has changed because that's only since, you know, Jack Stolzheimer came in.
Yeah.
The new DA – well, he'll be running for – I'm not pushing him, but I'm just saying he's running for election this year.
Stolzheimer is the district attorney now in a county, Delaware County, which is outside of Philadelphia.
Right.
And I think he does a great job.
Yeah.
So I will push him.
Yes. So he's in his first term soon, possibly into his second term.
Yeah.
So when he came in the first term, he changed that to that particular, you know, a summary offense for small marijuana use. The interesting thing is about we have all these states surrounding us that are now legal, like New Jersey and New York, right? Mm-hmm. And so the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, it might have been a Superior Court case actually came down with a case recently that if you pull somebody over for a stop and you smell marijuana, that they could be coming from New Jersey. So you have to be very careful as how you handle that case. So I'm not saying that you don't have probable cause to take it further, but it was an interesting case that there's just a certain procedure that they have to do now. They have to kind of get the person tested. There's all kinds of things because all around us is legal marijuana use.
Right, right.
So that's interesting.
That's interesting. So yeah. When the person was using, they were in a legal place.
Yes.
Now they drive to Pennsylvania and it's just – it could be on their clothes.
Right.
Right, Linda?
In Colorado, they found that 45% of impaired drivers in Colorado have poly drug use, that once they test them, they see more than one drug. And the most common is alcohol plus Delta-9. And I think that's a whole new era. The impairment is different than a possession.
Right.
I agree with the possession. It might be legal in their state, but it's not legal here.
Right.
You know, you see those shows To Catch a Smuggler. It's not legal in the airport and it's not legal federally, so people do get it, but not for possession. But we don't have a way to figure out impairment.
Right. And then Philadelphia handles their cases differently too. So, you know, you take the L into 69th Street, you're in Upper Darby, and people think like, hey, I could just smoke my joint on the way out of the subway car. Well, no, you can't.
This whole thing about legalization – has not been thought out for a million reasons. It's complicated. There's nothing centralized. It's a mess.
Right.
It's a mess.
But you had asked me, I'll say this, you know, publicly, or you had asked me one time what I thought about, you know, the legalization of marijuana. And as we discussed, for people that are sick, that are ill, that are in pain, absolutely.
Sure.
But for the general public, I don't know. I mean, I'm still of this school that thinks that it's a gateway, and I've had friends that push back on me with that. Oh, no, you don't know that. The studies show. I'm like, listen, I just personally believe that people that start on marijuana move on to something else. And I just don't feel that it's a good idea. But hey, I'm not a legislator. I'm a judge. So if the legislature mm-hmm. decides we're going to legalize marijuana, then I, as the judge, am going to follow the law and enforce the law. Not right. enforce it, but
that's
interpret
your, that's your
it.
Job.
Yes.
I mean, Linda, look, does anybody really know that marijuana does not lead to other drugs or does?
They don't know.
Right? But from what I know, all my friends, when we started doing it, was with marijuana.
Right.
All of us. Mm-hmm. Now, some of us, not me, were lucky enough not to get addicted.
Right.
And then some of us got addicted. So, this is probably very unpopular, but it was probably would have been a better idea not to legalize it anywhere. But that's not a it's not popular.
The trend is going the other way.
Oh, yeah. The
states are dropping
legal.
They're dropping.
One after another. Yeah.
And the trend is going the other way. And the addiction problem is getting worse.
Yes.
Yes. And in Colorado, all the other drug use is up as well in Colorado.
Yeah.
Where the pot's legal. It's been legal for years there.
Right.
They have the most cases of these impaired drivers. And they also have a lot of people on pills now and fentanyl. And They're rethinking it, but I don't think they're going to change it.
Yeah, and an analogy is this cashless bail push. There's a push for cashless bail, and Philadelphia does it. And people say, Judge, you know, do you believe in this? And I just said, look, again, it's a legislative decision. If the legislature decides to go to cashless bail in Pennsylvania, then I'm going to follow it because that's my job.
Right.
But my personal opinion is that there are some cases, not all, there are some cases that require a bail to keep – either to protect the community or to ensure the attendance of that defendant at trial. That's always been the standard. I think it's a good standard. I do not disagree that in some cases there's some high bails that are being put out that probably shouldn't. But I know in Delaware County we have a bail interviewer's office. They make a recommendation. The judge takes it. I look at the case. I look at the facts. And I've been doing it for 20 years, so I just kind of make a determination. But anyway, I didn't mean to.
No, it's good stuff.
Can you explain something about bail? Do they always get it back if they show up? Or does somebody keep a percentage? I don't know that.
There must be a percentage.
Yeah.
What do they get?
The county keeps 40%, which is.
40%?
Yeah. Delaware County, but. So there's always a push by the public defender, like, Judge, can you change the bail? And, sometimes we will because, it's kind of more punitive than it is. And it shouldn't be punitive.
Right.
But, the county keeps 40%.
So they get back 60% if they show up for trial.
Right.
If you're just joining us now, we're having a conversation with Judge Christopher Maddox, who's a magisterial district justice outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're getting the backstory on all this. And we're going to get into a lot of stuff during this interview. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-888-728-9941. That's 1-888-728-9941. This is your opportunity to talk to a sitting judge, everybody. You know, it's good stuff. So, Judge, besides getting caught with drugs, there's a lot of residual problems, car crashes, terrible decision making. I mean, do you start to see that kind of stuff? And what's the trend? What are you seeing? I mean,
those kind of offenses, the ones that are like summary offenses, they're going to increase, the disorderly conducts, being out unruly out in public, things like that. Criminal cases are still the basic ones of, drug and alcohol and, whatever else, abuse that kind of is behind the criminal activity or whatever the case may be. But, there's definitely the society, the way it's swinging these days is definitely increased a lot of those type offenses.
All right. So I get arrested. Okay, in your area in Delaware County, and I get arrested for 10 pounds of cocaine. I come in front of you first. Is that correct?
Correct.
The police bring me in front of you.
Right.
Is there a district, an assistant DA that comes also to your courtroom?
So in Delaware County, we have we now have a central arraignment. So we have a judge on call from 9 to 4 and then 6 to 9 for that day, and they're on call all 24 hours, but they're on duty 9 to 4, 6 to 9. So if I'm on duty, it'll come in front of me. The old way used to be your cases came to you. And so Upper Darby cases, mm-hmm. And then Upper Darby had an arrangement because we couldn't be on 24, 365.
Sure.
So we had an arrangement that we would take turns doing arraignments. Now there's a central arraignment. And so there's always a judge responsible each day, 365, holidays as well. And that's the first person that accused individual is brought in front of is the magisterial district judge. And at that time, we tell them about their rights. Mm-hmm. We tell them about their next hearing, which is their preliminary hearing, which is also done in front of a magisterial district judge in Pennsylvania. Not all states do that. And then finally, we set their bail. And that's where the bail recommendation comes in and all the other stuff.
Are you guys on video arraignment or all live?
They're all video.
Okay.
Since Corona, if I can say it like that, during Corona, we switched to video and it hasn't switched back. I think I told the story here once before that I like to get a feel for the person.
Me too.
So I like to see them in front of me and I like to communicate. You've seen me in action, Gary.
Oh, yes.
So I like to deal with people, talk, communicate. It's probably my growing up in a family of 13 kids and my psychology background. But anyway, we're doing it all by video right now.
I'd like to say this because I hear it on TV all the time and I never get the opportunity. All suspects are considered innocent until
proven
guilty in a court of law. Whew. I've wanted to say that for years.
Yeah.
You know that? So you set bail.
Yeah.
You could set whatever bail. Are there any guidelines? Is anybody looking over you and saying, nah, that's not cool?
Yeah. Well, right now the push is by the ACLU to get us to go cashless. Mm-hmm. And so they're studying it and they're looking at it. But just professionally, what we have is we have the bail interview. We can follow it or not follow it. And then we make our decision on bail. And then if there's a problem, yes, the Supreme Court can step in or your president judge, who is the leader of the county, the common pleas level. They're sort of our, quote, boss.
Yeah.
And they can step in and say, hey, listen, you did this bail here. We want to kind of talk to you about it and just make sure that we're all, doing this the right way and on the right page.
That's pretty interesting.
So there is some people looking into it in case, we don't want things to get too out of hand or too crazy.
Right. When we come back, we're going to continue our interview with District Justice Christopher Maddox. And I'd like to find out, how does he sleep at night with all these hard decisions, life decisions during the day? We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hi, this is Randy the Blade Lurch. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Sorry, we're back. Okay, we're back. Hey, listen, if you're just listening to us, you can watch us do the show, which is a lot of fun. Go on Facebook and go to our Facebook page, Clean and Sober Radio, right now, and you can watch us do the show. Like these folks who are watching us, Debbie Reynolds, Stacy Carroll, Betsy Kalish, Kevin Heyer, Dan Campbell, Linda, I'm going to screw this name up. Zezekniak? Ronald, I'm sorry if I screwed it up. Kathy Wolf Collin. Dan Campbell says, his week, one eye on your show and one eye on the Phillies game. Get your priorities straight. Come on, Dan. Betsy Kaler says she paid for Narcan with a prescription. Hopefully it will be affordable so everybody can carry it. That's right. Mark Willig is watching. Hey, Mark. Colleen Kilkenny is watching. Robert Brandis is watching. Chuck Williams is watching. Abdul Wahab is watching. Joel Cooper is watching from, I don't know, Florida probably. Good stuff. A lot of people are watching us. So, Judge, we're not – none of us are perfect. And you have some tough decisions during the day. Do you ever drive home and say, maybe it should have gone this way, or should have gone that way? Right. That's a hard thing. I don't want to put you in a bad position, but we're human.
Yeah, I think everyone has that. Any judge would have that in their, you know, the back of their brain, I guess, as they're driving home. Did I handle that correctly, or did I do the right thing? You know, at the end of the day, as I tell people in court, I'm going to try to make the best decision that I can make and put my, you know, put my best effort into it. And the good thing about our system is if you disagree with me, you can appeal it to the next level. Now, that's for the landlord tenant, the civil. Mm-hmm. The criminal, that's more of a – I just either determine I'm either going to hold the case over to the court of common pleas, or I'm going to dismiss it, or I'm going to dismiss certain charges. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit more immediate. And that – like if you make a mistake there, then – at least they can still fix it
right
at the next level.
I mean, do you ever
but you always think like, you know, there, and some cases really hit you. Like I had one, I'm not going to mention the case, but I'll just mention the particular that an infant died, you know, on the mom's bed. Like I literally, you know, and we have to be unbiased. We have to be non-prejudicial, but you know, I'm a father of a 10-year-old girl.
Sure.
And this little infant died because it smothered on a plastic bag. And I was like, so I literally had to get up from the bench after the case and walk out and collect myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, people, it really hits you. But so that bothers me more than, you know, whether I might have, because I do believe, at least at our level, that if we do make a mistake, most of them are fixed at the next level. I mean, fixable
and,
at the
and
next
probably
level.
There's percentages are that you're making the right decisions.
Yeah.
But do you ever lay in bed and think of, oh, tomorrow I have this case. Oh.
Yeah, I get sure. Because we have a history of it. Like, let's say we've continued the case and maybe it's a neighbor dispute, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, summer case, but, you know, and the neighbors just aren't getting along and you're trying to get them to see that. And I always say to them at the end of a case, I unfortunately can't make you be, you know, good neighbors. I can't make you like each other. But let's hope that I can resolve the problem so that we can move forward.
I bet your psychology background at the university helps you with this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I went to Temple University for psychology, and I thought they had a great program. And I think I was telling you the other day, I like the behavioral aspect for autism and for drug addiction. I really believe that they can do some great things with people. So,
do you do motivational interviewing while you're talking to people?
Yeah, definitely.
It's awesome.
You do a lot of stuff in the community besides sitting at the bench. You speak at schools and you participate in your community. And it's great because, you know, I even saw yesterday and the last time I was sitting, I think the people, you know, I think there's almost – you said to me when you're running for office, you know, that's my judge. That's my judge. You know, they like you. You know, they think you're fair.
Yes, I hope so.
You know? I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yes.
That's pretty cool if a judge knocks on your door, Linda. What would you think? You think you're being arrested? Is that what you would think?
No, never.
So one lady –
I would never think that.
One lady called into court the other day and was asking for continuance, and I actually answered the phone because my clerk was out in doing something. And so the lady said, oh, my God, you're Judge Maddox. You're like kind of like a celebrity.
Yeah, right.
Kind of.
That's cool.
But yeah, it was kind of neat.
Did you give her the continuance?
Yes.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Judge Christopher Maddox, and we're getting the background on being a judge. And, you know, our community, the people that are in addiction and people in recovery need to know that in your addiction – if you do certain things, you are going to be in the legal system. And that is costly. It is can be taking your freedom away. And also, unfortunately, it can ruin your life because of credit reports and because of the social media, and everybody's information is out there. So, you know, for getting jobs, for getting housing, it's best not to get involved in the legal system. So one way not to get involved is to
get treatment.
Get treatment. Treatment, treatment, treatment.
So, but I've had, and I'm sure you've had it, I was working in community health in Delaware County, and I've had somebody, they violate their parole, they're using, we test them, and we bring the lady into my boss's office, and we say, okay, we'll be happy to send you for treatment now. And she said she'd rather go back to jail. So, you know, the guy came and picked her up and took her back. So sometimes you get people that are very defiant. You're not speaking to them. You're talking to the drug they took. And it's very difficult. So how do you get people from your bench into treatment? Can you arrange it, or do you just have to trust that they'll get into it?
No, we have a program called the Second Chance Court, so that if someone – Not a dealer or no kind of violence involved in the case, but like a drug case, that they're eligible if they're eligible for the program. So when we do the arraignment, we schedule them for a drug and alcohol eval
assessment. Yeah,
right. And then they have to do that. So we put a modicum, a low amount of bail on there to make sure that they do it. And then once they do that, they can kind of move on from there. But the point is that Delaware County created this system probably it's probably going on 4 years now, that there's a second chance. And at the end of the program, like I said, for certain offenses, if you go through it and you're successful, it's like a clean slate.
That's so wonderful.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, it's even better than, you know, the program that they use for DUIs, ARD.
Yeah.
Because that's always going to be on your record.
Judge, is a second chance – is it for any kind of crimes?
No, it's just
it's just drug
certain drug cases.
Okay,
and mainly drug usage. I think the tendency is to have a sympathy for the user, but not for the dealer.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm just saying. I mean, you know, we have to be unbiased. We have to be fair. But I think that's sort of
How is that different than drug court, than sending them to Judge Hazel? When do you decide to send them up to him?
The drug court the drug court is a different program. That's run at the common pleas level. So I don't know what the requirements are or anything like that. But yeah, that's like they're there at common pleas and then they say, okay, let's do this drug court program. At least with the second chance court, it starts with us.
That's great.
Yeah. And so it's great.
If you need help now, you're listening to the show, you're watching the show, call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-888-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. And the phones will be answered and by professionals, and they will do their absolute best to get you into treatment. So that's an important number, maybe to have it on your refrigerator. 1-800-662-HELP. Because Judge is on here. We have so many people that are watching the show. I want to acknowledge some more people. And again, the names I'm reading, they're people that have gone on Facebook to our Clean and Sober radio page. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
And like Bob Giro is watching, Ken Garrity Jr. Mark Willick said something funny that Judge sleeps well because he has a Karate Kid in the other room. Mark, that's a good one. That's right. That's right. Let me see what else. So what's it like? You've been on the bench for 20 years now. You enjoy it every day?
Yep.
It's different every day?
Yep.
You can make a difference every day?
Yes.
You can save lives every day?
Yes.
And you could put people where they need to be every day?
Yes.
Whew, that power's intoxicating. I'm already intoxicated.
You want to do it?
Huh?
You want to be a judge?
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you don't have to be a lawyer in Pennsylvania to be a magisterial district justice.
That's awesome. We could just get you elected.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What, would you like to be a judge?
Oh, I'd love it.
Well?
I'd love it. All these good spots are taken, though, by these people who love it every day. Well, I'm too old to start now.
What is the – by the way, that's good. What is the age when you have to retire? Pennsylvania.
75.
It's 75.
That's awesome.
Yeah, somebody told me last night it was 80, and I knew it was not 80.
Mm-mm. 75.
75. Whew. You're going to be Chris, you're 35 now. You're going to be 40 more years.
Right, exactly.
Right?
You're so young.
Rachel W. from Madison, Wisconsin writes to us, can you tell me why getting into treatment is so difficult? Well, let me go first. Okay. Rachel, I'm not sure it's so difficult. I think if you really want it, there are absolute places you can get into. Mm-hmm. There are places that have scholarship money. And also, if you don't want to actually go into treatment because, you know, you're fooling yourself because you'll lose your job and everything, start going to AA meetings. Start going to NA meetings. They don't cost anything. But treatment, I think there is a sense that it's impossible to get into treatment if you don't have insurance. Not true, right?
Not true. Not in true. This state, a lot of the providers, a lot of the community providers will get you the insurance. You'll come in, you'll get an assessment, and then you'll sit with a social worker who will take you through the process of getting you the state insurance card, and then they can either see them at a community health outpatient level or they can try to get them a bed. But we do – the community health people in Zelco can get a state health card for the clients who come in without it. Some of the clients you send from court don't have insurance.
Right.
And then we have to get it for them. So, yes.
Mark absolutely. C. from Key West, Florida.
Oh, what does he say?
Are you this question, I mean, this has been forever. Are you considered clean and sober if you use drugs like Percs and marijuana for medicinal purposes? Yeah. I mean, no. I mean, I don't know.
Are you in California or Key West?
Well, you know what? Guess what?
California sober? They don't have the Percs on California sober.
Look, I know this is sort of a selfish thing, but, you know, you should do whatever the heck you want. It's not going to affect me. And the main thing is to be honest with yourself. You can fool yourself like we fooled ourselves through all of our addictions. We play games in our heads, and this is just another game. Look, if you are in chronic pain and you need certain medication, if you're really in pain, then use it. And okay, in that scenario, are you sober, Linda?
Yes. If you get a surgery and you have to have painkillers after and you take it as directed and you stop taking it, most doctors now will write for 4 weeks max and on some of them 2 weeks max. If you use it as directed and stop using it when the doctor tells you to stop, then you can – of course you're still sober. But if you're using it to get high, that's then you know in your head what you're doing. If you're taking it for real medicinal purposes for pain and you're following directions, that's great. Right. But you know what you're doing.
Okay. Right. It's all about being honest with yourself.
It's all about your head. Is your head being run by the drugs or are you running it?
Right.
And sometimes you have to take something.
Right. Judge, so you get people coming in front of you. Linda, I'm fascinated with what he does, okay? I love
that.
Going
well,
there.
Well, you saw it twice.
Yeah.
Now I'll have to come down.
Sure. You're getting people get caught with a little bit of marijuana. I mean, enough that it's not a summary offense. Is that when the problem starts?
Well, when it's considered a possession with intent to deliver or, you know, a possession of a larger amount of drugs, it's more serious than – but, I mean, that like I said, that was a district attorney's policy on the marijuana possession of a small amount. I don't have a problem. Like I said, it's their program, and I don't have a problem with that.
But you have leeway in all these cases.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, if I came in front of you with a pound of marijuana, maybe it is for personal use, unless I had a bag. Right. Unless I had it all bagged up in little bags.
That I don't have any discretion in. That's the charging authority, and then I just hear the case. DA's office might not charge you, but I can't. I have to deal with the cases that are put in front of me and the charges that are put in front of me. But now where I come in is that, you know, when I try to figure out, you know, how to move it forward, you know, I can get involved with, like I said, with second chance court, get them towards the treatment end. Or if it's more of like a dealer or something like that, then, you know, if I hold it over, it goes through the criminal justice system.
So if I went in front of you for an armed robbery and that was the charge, could you say – let them go.
If they don't prove their case, yes. But no, I'm not just going to say because I know you.
But wait a minute, judge. prove their case to you, right?
Some people, you know, I mean, some cases are not as strong as others. So there's cases that have been dismissed at my level, and you know, but the police always have an option to rearrest, but it has to come in back in front of the same judge. So you can't forum shop, I guess is what the word that they use. So so there's been like maybe an occasion where they didn't have a certain witness or evidence, and it was must be tried, so they had to do it that day. And I dismissed the case, and then they rearrested and brought it back. It was brought back in front of me, and then they made sure they had their evidence ready for that particular. Oh, yep.
Isn't that like double jeopardy or
no,
something?
No, it's not. It's
no.
not.
It's just a charge.
No,
it's
because
not a conviction.
We're at our level, it's just the preliminary hearing, and it's charges and new charges. But if it goes to a trial and then gets not guilty, then it would be double jeopardy.
You know what? You know, Linda, I was just thinking about something. You know why I could not be a judge?
Why?
Because I'd let everybody go. because I remember what I did decades ago, and I feel sort of bad. You know, on low level, I'm not talking about horrific things.
Right.
I'm just talking about, you know.
A little bit.
Have you ever been arrested?
No.
Seriously?
Thank God.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm starting to have my doubts about Mark because this is my third time here. I'm always here on Good Friday, right? So this is Good Friday. So so happy Easter to all who celebrate.
Absolutely.
Happy Passover.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To all who celebrate. Yeah. But so this is my third time on the show, and Mark has been absent every single time. So I was teasing him at the party for Gary's 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
That I said, oh, we're going to have to look into your record. There's something there. He goes, oh, no.
That's funny. Now
I'm going to have to do a deep dive. Now, I'm glad he's not here because I get to deal with Linda. So that's good. But anyway.
I remember when I was – I had to be young, 18, 19, 20, something like that.
Yeah.
I totaled my car. So I talked my father into lending me his car. And I take whatever I've been taking every day, the usual stuff. I'm not going to say what it was. And I get in his car and drive down Queens Boulevard. I'm coming to his store to work. We had a dry cleaning store. It was kind of like Upper Darby, Woodside, Queens. And I crashed his Cutlass into the back of the Queens Boulevard bus. Totaled it. And I call him. I'm like two blocks from his store. And my father loved me the way you dote on Christine. And it's just, he loved me. But there I was in the ER with a thing around my head and everything. The car's wrecked, and he said a bad word.
You mean a curse word?
Yes. But then he says, okay, I got you out of the hospital. You know, he did whatever he did, and I was on my own to take a cab home. He was so mad at me. Then the policeman comes who was making my accident, and he says, oh, look, this whole bag of drugs fell out of your purse. You better put these back in your bag out of your father's car. He gave it back to me.
Are you serious?
That's New York in the 70s.
So you were never arrested?
Never arrested. That was the closest I came, though. Two car crashes in a week.
Yeah, well, let's get back to Mark Sigmund because
– oh, we got to look him up.
Here's what happens. I think the week before, like the week of March 25th, he always gets arrested. And he says he's going fishing.
That must be
it. And that's why he doesn't show up.
Too bad he's not listening to the show.
Well, he might
be.
He's in Florida. He's having a great time.
That's so cool.
Great time.
So, do you hear the gag one, gag twos, or are those all common pleas?
Common pleas. There's
how come there's no record of that? If I had a client who got a probation violation, the parole calls me and says, "Have they been attending treatment?" And I have to say honestly, the person hasn't been here in 2 weeks.
Right.
And they say, "I'm going to go pick them up." They pick them up. And then the client tells me they had a gag one or a gag two in front of whatever judge. It's not always Judge Hazel if they're not in drug court.
Right.
But there's no record of that on their records, on the docket.
I don't –
is that a separate thing completely, the gag one, gag two hearings?
Yeah, that's past me, so I don't really know.
Okay.
But I know my friends on the common pleas bench do them. But, yeah, I would assume that it would be recorded, but I didn't know it wasn't.
Yeah, because it's not like a new charge.
Right.
So it's not really on the docket. It's a private thing about their incarceration
or
their probation.
I guess they're just considering whether you violated and then they're going to –
Either
so put more restrictions
on you or not.
But it's past my level, so I don't.
So you don't have to hear those.
Yeah, I don't.
Judge, would you recommend when somebody comes in front of you to be represented by an attorney? And don't answer it right now. When we come back, I'd like to get your answer.
This This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery, because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial. And it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HigherCalling.org. That's HYERCalling.org. And find out how we can help you.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jack Zor, author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. So, Judge Maddox, would you recommend people coming into your court with an attorney, or does it depend on what kind of case it is?
It depends on the case, and also in my area, there's not a lot of rich folks, for lack of a better word, and so not everybody can. And I know that, and I'm also like a lawyer, you know. Like I said, not all of us are, so I don't do the case for them, but I'll kind of make sure that you know that they're getting through it. You know, I have to be fair to both sides, but just make sure that they can get their case put forth in a way that they can make their case.
See, you're so fair and compassionate. You want to level the field in some way for people that can't afford an attorney.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool that you do that. Yeah. And you know what? It's the right thing to do.
Right. And, you know, criminal cases, fortunately, we have the public defender.
Right. Yeah.
And I would say probably 70% of my criminal cases are public defender cases because that's the area that I'm in.
Yes.
And then the other 30% would be private counsel. And then in the landlord and tenant, which you witnessed yesterday, and my civil, I do that sort of after my landlord and tenant. There's not many attorneys that come in for the tenants, although I would recommend it if they could afford it or, you know, if the situation is complex and they really want to get their point across. But I understand they can't always afford an attorney. So we make it work. You were there, so.
You absolutely do make it work. Is it easier for a judge, for yourself, to deal with a case if there is attorneys there?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, the judge loves when both sides are represented by attorneys.
It takes a pressure off you a little bit?
Yeah, because even at the common pleas level, you have people that want to be pro se, that want to represent themselves, and you know, you know, a custody case or a divorce case, it just makes the case much more harder to accomplish. It's probably harder on the opposing attorney than it is the judge, but it's harder. And so the judges have to get more involved. And the least amount of time that we get involved, the better. But at the same time, you know, we have to make sure the courtroom is running smoothly and things are progressing. So, you know, in that case, we have to maybe do a little bit more than we normally would have to do.
Well, you're sitting on the bench. Do you watch the clock?
In the sense that I'm looking at the people and then looking at the clock to see, like, all right, what's the rest of the day going to – how's this going to go? But I'm not, like, constantly looking at the clock. No, like, or looking at my – I don't wear a watch. But, like, that would be very disrespectful to the people that are presenting to me. And one of the things I learned with my psychology background and growing up in that big family is, you know, at least – you know, attend to the people. Pay attention to people. It goes a long way to really – helping and resolving things.
So you learn that in school about putting the clock right behind the client so you can be looking at them and you can still see the clock.
And that's where it is in my courtroom.
Yeah, it's on
the back wall.
Where you look like you're looking at the person, but you can still see the clock. You learn that in school.
I think it's school.
Because you don't want to look at your watch. Like, I don't wear a watch either. I don't want to look at my phone with a client, and I want to see the clock, like, right over their shoulder.
Well, you know, yesterday in court, when I was sitting next to the judge,
you were probably
it was going on a long – it was going long. And I'm watching the clock.
Right?
Yeah. I was watching the clock. It was good. It's very it's sad. It's entertaining. It's
right.
Real life.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that I do a lot with the community, and I wanted to tell you this while we were here. There was three University of Pennsylvania law students that were sitting in the back of the courtroom yesterday that I didn't even know about. I don't think I
knew it.
Okay. And so after the court, I said, gentlemen, it was three men. I said, gentlemen, come on up. So they came up and I sat there and I talked to them for half an hour. And I said, and I wrote down like what I was doing with one of the cases. And I said, how would you three decide that case? And I said, I wrote it down. So they're talking and we're talking back and forth about the case. Mm-hmm. And then they said, we would do X. And I held up my thing and I said, you guys are going to be great. Because I had the same.
That's great.
That's wonderful.
So, but I love doing stuff like that. I mean, just, I was glad they were there. And I was glad I got a chance to talk to them after court was all over. And so it was very interesting, though.
Yeah.
Part of the public service that you do as a judge.
So when are you – so, Judge, you've been on the bench for
– 20 years.
20 years. It started in 2003, didn't it? Yeah. Reelected in 2009. Ran for reelection in 2015.
Wow.
The people like you.
I hope so.
Which day do you find time to marry all those people? I see on your Facebook page. Which day is that? The civil day or the?
I call it another Friday wedding.
Oh,
and
cute.
So I do it every Friday, and the people say they love seeing it. So that's why I do it.
Oh, I mean, love
it. Yeah, I think it's I want to show that we do more than just the criminal and the civil and the landlord tenant. Like we do official weddings.
That's
too.
Community service.
And
awesome.
Yeah, and people bring kids, and it's great. So yeah.
So that's on Fridays.
Yes.
All right.
We should go on a Friday and see people get married. That would be fun.
And then he represents them 2 years later.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, I just wanted two other people are watching. I want to just mention Madeline Creighton's watching, and Frank DeSantis is watching. Judge Maddox, thank you so much for coming in, and bringing your star, witness, I guess, Christine. Linda, thank you for hanging in here and substituting for Mark.
Anytime.
We love you coming in here. You do a great job. And remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Linda Elkins.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
A warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities through a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code, and who enable the full potential of our students, our communities, and our country. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Shape the future. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, we are there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community, and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve. Go to afreserve.com for more information.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.